Hello and welcome back to the RHS Gardening Podcast. Every fortnight we bring you a mixture of features and discussions exploring every aspect of gardening, plant care, pest control, growing your own fruit and vegetables, container ideas and garden design. Plus we have expert seasonal advice throughout the year. Coming up in this edition, the Not So Humble Umble, a guide to a popular group of flowers which can add easy maintenance interest to any domestic garden. There's so much more than cow parsley. RHS advisors answer your spring gardening questions, and, as always, the latest news on RHS garden events across the UK. But first, let's join the experts to hear what jobs they're tackling right now.
My name's Matthew Pottage, and I'm Deputy Curator here at RHS Garden Wisley. So now we're really into start of summer in a serious way at Wisley. A lot of our tender plants are now coming out. We've still got a slight risk of frost on a night, but generally a lot of our plants, like the cannas, the hedychiums, and a lot of our containerized exotic plants are coming out for the summer. If things will take a light frost, get them out now. Don't leave them sitting around in warm greenhouses. If you've got tender bedding plants, you need to be hardening things off, and that's taking them in at night if there's a risk of frost. But getting things into the ground now while there's still some moisture around, getting things planted, getting things established, trying to be ahead of the game. If you've got in your tender plants, say your penstemons, and you know they'll be safe in the ground, get in any staking, get them watered, apply a granular feed if you're going to do that, if the soil is not very full of nutrient, and then get down a mulch. You can almost do so much of your gardening year now in this month by getting things in the ground, feeding them, mulching them, and that all-important layer of mulch is going to stop months of weeding throughout the summer months ahead. So really try and dedicate some time to get your borders into order, really, and it will save you time later in the summer.
My name is Markus Rathscheid, and I am one of the garden managers here at the RHS flagship garden at Wisley. We are now getting into the most busiest period of the year. The bank holiday lurking around the corner at the end of May gives us plenty of things to do. So your tomato plants from your glasshouse need to be hardened off, because effectively they are annuals. They have been planted and they are sown in March or in April. They've been pricked out. This means you're taking little seedlings off from your pot, space them into larger pots, but again you want to harden them off so they experience the change of temperature and the change of light quality before you take them out of doors, ideally on your bank holiday Monday after your breakfast. They need to be planted. Also, make sure you have got your succession of other seedlings in your vegetable garden, so your salad border can be a star for this time of the year. Plant lettuces every 2 weeks. This gives you continuous supply of fresh leaves in your kitchen. Every 2 weeks, you can not only plant the traditional English little gem lettuces, but why don't you try something new? Go for the exciting mixtures of Asian leaf cultivars. There are baby leaf versions of lettuces, there are Asian mixtures, Mitsuma lettuces that you can try and plant, but also, of course, your traditional English little gem lettuces. So there's lots to do, and keep an eye on them so you got your space in your vegetable garden. You make sure they are planted every 2 weeks, and this gives you constant enjoyment, not only for yourself, but also for your little friends in the garden, the slugs. And you need to keep an eye on those, and you need to manage and you control those in your vegetable garden, because not only you are hungry, but they are hungry too. And what you want to do is you want to make slug control measures. Ideally, place out nematodes. The temperatures will be right now. You can get them from our plant center here at RHS Wisley. And they have been mixed into water. They have been irrigated onto your salads. And the nematodes infest the slugs that are staying underground overnight, and they are not harmful to your hedgehog, not harmful to your birds, to your robins, but that's a way to control them in your vegetable garden close to nature.
You can find out more information about all aspects of plants and gardening techniques on the advice pages of our award-winning RHS website, plus general gardening tips and guides to seasonal jobs. Go to rhs.org.uk/advice. I'm Tony Dickerson, and you're listening to the RHS Gardening Podcast. Many less experienced gardeners may be unfamiliar with the term umbel, but few will fail to recognise the lacy, flat-topped clusters of flowers that make up cow parsley. But the umbel group of plants isn't limited to cow parsley. They also include a wide variety of flowers, all with the characteristic umbrella-like shape. A firm favourite with award-winning garden designers at RHS shows over the last few years, this striking, wildlife-friendly and versatile group of plants has many benefits for domestic gardeners and makes an elegant addition to borders and containers. Phil Clayton, assistant editor of the RHS Monthly magazine for members, The Garden, explains.
I'm going to choose my six favourite umbels. But first, I suppose, I better explain what umbels actually are. The term umbel really refers to any member of the Apiaceae family, which used to be known as the umbelliferae family. So things like cow parsley and a lot of vegetables, actually, carrots, celery, parsnips, things like that all belong to the umbel family. But there are an increasing number which are grown by gardeners for their appearance, so for their use in flower borders. To me, there's nothing more lovely than that time in May when you get the roadsides filled with the clouds of cow parsley coming up, that lovely sort of transparent nature that it has, with often with bees and other pollinators buzzing around. Really lovely time of the year. But you don't necessarily want cow parsley in your garden. It's an invasive weed, really, although it can be controlled. But there are some other even more attractive umbels which I would recommend. The first one actually is a cultivated selection of cow parsley. It's Anthriscus sylvestris ravenswing. And what makes this plant special is the almost black foliage, which contrasts quite dramatically with the flat heads of white lace-like flowers. It's a very dainty plant, and it's at its best at that moment in spring and early summer when all the foliage is at its most lush and is in full flower. Plant it somewhere fairly moist. In a dry spot, it will soon collapse. But a moist area in light shade, it's the ideal sort of thing for underplanting trees, as long as they've got quite a light canopy. And it will self-seed quite freely around the garden, although some of those seedlings will be green-leaved and they're best extracted. Otherwise, you'll end up with just a load of green cow parsley rather than this lovely dark-leaved form. My second choice, I can't actually choose any one of these plants, but are the angelicas. And there are three that spring to mind that I'd particularly recommend. Angelica archangelica, which is grown in herb gardens. People, as you, I'm sure you know, candy the stems of angelica. But it actually makes quite an interesting garden plant. It has broad, fairly coarse foliage. But then in summer, early summer, these great huge heads, sort of football size heads of green flowers. It's really quite dramatic when it's in bloom. The flowers appear at about 5, maybe even 6 feet high. The drawback with these flowers are that the flowers all turn very quickly to seed, and then the seeds spread all over the garden. So you have to be a bit careful to remove the seed before they drop. But for a while, it's a really impressive plant. It's a monocarpic plant, so after it's bloomed, it will die. So you do want a few seedlings to carry on the display in a couple of years' time. It usually takes a couple of years to flower. More dramatic, perhaps, is Angelica gigas. It's a slightly smaller plant, but what's interesting about this is that the flowers are ruby red and sort of dome-shaped, these great heads of flowers, but this really dark, intense ruby colour. It's a very statuesque plant. Flowers later than Archangelica, well into the summer, and is usually, again, monocarpic, but sometimes plants will flower for a second time. The third one I was going to recommend is Angelica sylvestris Vicarsmead. Angelica sylvestris is actually a native, UK native plant, but Vicarsmead, again, is another dark-leaved form, so it's got these sort of dusky purplish stems and foliage, and then rising above these cow parsley-like heads of white blooms. It's quite a dramatic thing, and again, it's that contrast of the flowers against the foliage. So those Angelicas collectively were my second plant. My third is the giant fennel, Ferula communis. This is a real giant, it's well named. It's a plant that comes from the Mediterranean into Asia. It's quite a variable plant in the wild, but it is a very dramatic perennial. After a few years, you'll get a flower stem produced, great tall thing, and covered in lime green flowers. And this is all carried above mounds of very dainty filigree green foliage. The foliage itself grows throughout autumn and winter. It's a plant that likes a hot, well-drained, sunny position, and obviously, from the sound of it, plenty of space. It needs space to spread out. By complete contrast is another Mediterranean plant, actually, Orlea grandiflora. Now, this is a true annual umbel, and it's the sort of plant that grows in olive groves. You often see it below olive trees, perhaps mixing with little annual poppies and things in the Mediterranean and perhaps in parts of Italy or Greece. It's a beautiful thing. The heads of flowers are rather like lace. In fact, that's its common name, the white lace flower. As I say, it's an annual, so you would sow it indoors between March and May at around 15 degrees centigrade. You can direct sow it outside in late summer, but it won't bloom until the following year, and it needs a really open, sunny site. I've grown it before, combined it with our own native corn cockle, which has pink flowers, and that's a very pretty combination. My fifth choice is another giant, actually, and quite a rare plant in cultivation still, but if you can get hold of it, it's definitely worth growing. It goes by the very awkward name of Molopospermum peloponnesiacum, and as you may be able to tell from the name, it comes from the southern Alps and the Pyrenees. It's a true perennial, so it comes back year after year, and the thing I like about it, actually, is when it first emerges, the whole plant dies right down to the ground in the winter. But then in the spring, you get these incredible sort of muscular shoots coming up through the ground. They're often bronze tinted, and they sort of open almost like a parasol into a mass of finely divided leaves, and forming a really lovely, a really beautiful mound of foliage, not quite unlike anything else, really. And then as the year goes by, so into early summer now, those are topped by heads of white flowers. Although the mounds are large, it's not actually especially tall. The flowers don't tend to be held on very high stems. It's a good plant for a gravel garden. It doesn't want too much drought, though. It needs to be kept reasonably moist at the root. And actually, it will grow in a little bit of light shade, perhaps with a bit of cover from deciduous trees. And I wouldn't say it's a great plant for a herbaceous border, because it dies down quite quickly in late summer, so you can be left with a bit of a gap. But as a sort of plant in a more open situation, it's a great thing. The last plant I'm going to choose is much more easy to obtain, probably known by a lot of people, but I couldn't ignore it. It's the good old bronze fennel, Fenniculum vulgare purpureum. The reason I've chosen it is because it, to me, is a plant for almost all the seasons. You've got the foliage in the spring, which is, you know, this billowing mass of bronze, finely divided bronze foliage, like a cloud almost, and it makes a great foil for things like tulips and alliums. Then in the summer, you get those flattened heads of yellow flowers on tall, quite wiry stems. And if you don't cut them down, then in autumn and winter, you get the seed heads, which are quite architectural, actually. Obviously, it seeds quite freely around the garden, and you'll get some green seedlings coming up. I quite like that, actually, having the green and the purple together. It's quite a nice contrast, the two together. It's a very easy plant. It's good for gravel gardens and reasonably long-lived. It lasts 3 or 4 years, but you always get seedlings coming up, so you can just whip out the old ones when they start to get a bit tatty. That's my last plant, so I hope you enjoyed those.
Phil Clayton, assistant editor of the RHS Monthly magazine for members, The Garden. As May gets into full swing, there are countless RHS attractions and events to enjoy in the glorious spring sunshine. Here are just a few. At RHS Garden Rosemore on the 22nd of May, come and see tutor Nigel Pinhorn identify bird species through their plumage, song and behaviour, as well as details of folklore, habitat, the history of ornithology and avian literature. Visit RHS Garden Hyde Hall's open-air cinema on the 23rd of May to see E.T., the extraterrestrial, by an idyllic lakeside setting. The cost is £12 per person and booking is essential. Learn about the basic principles involved in the construction of a traditional dry stone wall and try to construct one yourself at RHS Garden Harlow Car on the 30th of May. Tea and coffee and all workshop materials will be included. From the 4th of June at RHS Garden Wisley in Surrey, you can attend a two-day course on designing detailed planting plans. Designer Andrew Wilson shows how planting is initially structured and a basic palette selected, and students will develop their own ideas in readiness for the second day. The course includes a light lunch. Full details of all these events and more are on the RHS website. Go to rhs.org.uk/gardens-what's-on. Now, if you're a regular listener to the RHS Gardening Podcast, you already know that members of the RHS Gardening Advice Team regularly answer your gardening questions. As you can hear, we receive questions by phone, also by email and letter. But the team also answers gardening questions in person at our RHS shows.
Hello there, my name's Kirsty Angwin. I've come from the Surrey Hills, quite near the new oil find in Hawley. And I've got a question about my daffodils, please. Primarily, I want to know why my daffodils haven't really flowered very well this year. They've been very patchy. Some have been good, some haven't.
Well, hello, Kirsty. We know each other. Kirsty is one of our volunteers, and the RHS relies heavily on hundreds of volunteers who help out at lots of events and activities at our gardens and elsewhere. And Kirsty's asking a question that we've had a lot of this year, particularly this spring: blind daffodils. Now, it's not an uncommon question, it comes up every year, but it's usually where people are growing daffodils in a bit of grass, a bit of rough lawn or whatever, or if they own a park in their parkland, and the clumps simply get too congested. And what determines whether a bulb actually flowers is its physical size, and if the bulb is too small, it will simply not support a flower. And so that's a very common problem in, say, areas of grass. And the clumps eventually, in a bed or border, you'd lift the daffodils, dig them up, separate them, plant the bigger ones, and off you'd go again. But in grass, that's not practical. So normally you just replant in the spaces in between. But this year, daffodil blindness has been a much more common problem. And we think it's down to the fact that last spring into early summer, we had extremely dry weather that then became extremely dry and hot. And daffodils are unusual. Although they're a bulb, most bulbs, like tulips, they like really dry, hot summer conditions. And a bulb is an adaptation to dry soil conditions. But the daffodil is more a bulb that's accustomed to damper, heavier soils. But it seems that very dry spring, early summer, the bulbs were not able to sort of get back up to flowering size before the foliage actually withered away. All other things being equal, again, it does seem surprisingly dry at the moment, but if we get a decent amount of rain, hopefully those blind daffodils will have done enough growing that they can actually get back up to flowering size. But that remains to be seen. But certainly this year, very common problem.
Thank you very much. I'll leave them and see what happens next year then.
I'm Andrew Booth. I live in Potters Bar, Hertfordshire. I just asked, why haven't I got box blight? Because you hear a lot about it. And I have got some old plants, but I take cuttings every year from them.
That's just a perfect way around of doing things, because if you actually go out and buy some new plants, it can come with it. What happens on nurseries is they spray them to keep the disease under control, you know, just in case it has got it. They do it as a preventative measure. And so what happens, unfortunately, or what can happen, unfortunately, is when they arrive in our gardens, of course, we don't spray them, and then the disease is allowed to develop. But if you've already got plants in your garden from years and years ago, it is unlikely that the disease will come in on the wind. It's not so much a wind-blown fungal disease. It actually travels via raindrops from diseased material.
So I won't get it if other people have got it in the area?
Perhaps. Unless you've got your garden open to the public, as under the National Garden Scheme or something like that, and then it can come in on people's feet. But if you don't have it, you probably will remain not having it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Pat Rimpath. I'm a member of the RHS, and my question is, we've got a stump for a London plane tree in our garden, which is still sprouting leaves, and we can't do anything about our neighbours' gardens because they've got plane trees in, so we have a real problem with baby ones, but I really wanted to know, what's the best way of getting rid of the stump?
Well, you can have it ground out so that obviously the stump's lower, but that won't prevent the problem with the shoots coming up everywhere. So all you can really do is keep spraying them with a glyphosate-based weed killer. So glyphosate is the active ingredient in products such as Roundup or Tumbleweed. I mean, even digging them up is probably unlikely to help. But if you keep spraying them, they will go away in time. Having a stump in the garden isn't such a good idea in general either, because it can encourage, if honey fungus is in the area, it can actually encourage it to take hold. So if there's any chance of actually getting the stump ground down lower as well, that would be really good.
Okay, and how about these Roundup and so on, because we've also got a pond with frog spawn in.
It's no problem, because the chemical stays within the root. It's systemic. You spray it onto the foliage, or indeed the cut wood, and it stays within the system of the plant. It doesn't go into waterways as long as you don't put it into waterways.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Pleasure. I'm Madeline Hughes, and I live in South London near Crystal Palace, and it's very clay. And the garden, I've got this all over. And I didn't know whether it was a weed or a plant.
Yeah, so now the lady's brought in this sample. It's definitely a plant. Now, whether it's a weed or not, well, that's open to whether you fall in love with it or not. It's a little plant, very succulent. It has very nice little yellow flowers, probably no more than 3/4 of an inch across. Yellow flowers, lots of petals there. And the leaves are heart-shaped and on quite, succulent little stems. It's very low to the ground, probably no more than 2 or 3 inches high. And actually, it's celandine, lesser celandine. And it's generally regarded as a bit of a weed because it spreads very freely, both from seed, but also the plant grows from little bulbs or bulb bills. And if you try and dig it up, you'll dig up most of it, but you'll always leave behind some, and they will regrow, and it will self-seed. And so in that respect, it can be a very difficult weed to eradicate in the garden. What I would say, and it's not an easy one to kill with weed killers either, because the bulb bills and so on give it some resources, it often grows back. The one thing in its favour, I say, pretty yellow flowers, but it does die back very early. Once the weather starts getting warm, it'll show up in spring. You'll have this nice carpet of these bright, shiny green leaves and these yellow flowers. And I say, it can be a bit of a pain, but it does die back early. So what I would generally say, it doesn't compete with other garden plants. And if you find trying to treat it with weed killer or dig it up is impossible, which some people do, I'd just live with it. Remove what you can, but generally, come early summer, it'll be going back, and by the middle of summer, you won't even see it.
Okay, as long as it doesn't interfere with other plants, right, that's fine. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Susan Mason, and I'm gardening for a little school in London, and I think I've got honey fungus in the garden. I was wanting to share a few photos to see if you thought that might be. I mean, I've got about several plants. That's an amelanchier.
Okay, so I've got a photograph here on the mobile phone of the lower part of an amelanchier, and it's quite far away, but I can home in on it, and I can see that the bark has, you've actually peeled the bark away, or it's fallen off.
Yes, well, it was peeling slightly, so I peeled it a little bit more. Yes, it was.
Okay, well, you've given us the perfect diagnostic, actually, which is at the base of the tree, the bark has come away, and there's a sheet of white mycelium underneath, which will smell of mushrooms.
Yes.
And that is absolutely a classic, unfortunate sign that you do have honey fungus on that particular tree. You say you have other things that are affected.
Yes, quite a few things affected. The thing is, we had a big beech in the middle of the garden that was taken down, but because it was such a lovely old thing with a diameter trunk of about 5 feet in diameter, they chopped it down to about 15 feet and then sculpted it with lovely animals and everything. But it means they've left it in the ground. And I think its root system must be killing various things in the garden.
Do you know, I think I've spoken to you on the phone.
Oh.
unless there are several schools around the London area which have sculptures made out of beech tree stumps. And yes, I think we decided at the time that that's probably what had happened. But yeah, absolutely. And so leaving stumps in the ground can indeed lead to honey fungus. You know, our gardens and properties have been gardened for so many years. It's endemic and it's just around and about.
I think you thought the best thing to do is to keep well watered and really look after them and fertilise them.
Yeah, ideally choose things off our website which are meant to be more resistant to honey right. fungus. I say meant to be because anything woody is actually susceptible, except for bamboo, which really isn't ideal in many, many circumstances. Yeah. And also herbaceous plants are very resistant, herbaceous plants are normally, and grasses are a good bet as well.
Brilliant, thanks very much.
Right, my name is Ivor Mace. I live in the Rhondda Valley in South Wales. I'm up in London in the Shawyer, and I've just bought a nice plant of Erythronium, and I'd like to know a little bit more about it.
Okay. Erythronium loves a woodland kind of environment, so if you make your own compost, it would love that mixed in with the soil that you plant it in, and ideally somewhere where it's part sun, part shade,
I've got just the place.
And they should bulk up for you quite nicely. If they come from they come from various areas. There are some that come from North America, and there are some more Asian ones. But either way, they should naturalise for you. They're really good doers as long as they've got that moisture at their feet. They don't want to dry out completely.
Well, they won't dry out where I live because we get 100 inches of rain a year.
Sounds absolutely perfect. Yeah, but it's woodland leaf mouldy kind of feel that you want with your soil.
Right. Okay. Well, I can do that for sure.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Me and fellow RHS advisor Jenny Bowden helping visitors at the RHS Great London Plant Fair with their gardening problems. As well as free horticultural advice, RHS members also get free entry to all four RHS gardens. The opportunity to buy discounted and priority tickets to RHS events and flower shows, such as the RHS Chelsea Flower Show, and much more, including an extra gardening podcast every month for members. If you're not already a member, why not find out more about its benefits? Just go to rhs.org.uk/join. So that's all we have time for in this edition. We'll be back in a fortnight. Until then, we hope you enjoy the May sunshine and flowers. For now, from me, Tony Dickerson, and all the RHS Gardening Podcast team, goodbye.